Tango Tango Papa 1978, November 12th, 2016.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Smithton, Pennsylvania. What's this? Two podcasts in a row? one night and then one again the next night? Well, I felt like making a podcast, and then I also got an audio comment that we're going to be listening to. Actually, a couple of comments from Jeremy. And I listened to the first little bit of it, and he's talking about the election. He's got some election comments, and so that's where, he got to that part, and I quit. So we'll pretty much be listening to Jeremy together, Jeremy's comments, when he actually gets into the meat of whatever the comments are. So... if you kind of look at the headlines, these stupid protests against Trump, and basically what are they protesting? They're protesting, their protests don't make any sense. They're protesting, they say, well, Trump is not my president, and then they say they're say no to misogyny and sexism and, homophobia, blah, blah, a whole litany of whatever. And none of these really apply to Trump. I'm sorry, but they don't apply to Trump. But these people, something is created in their minds, and it was, kind of the Hillary campaign. And but it's not only Hillary. This has been created in their minds. Basically, it started with their parents started them off on that, and then the parents sent them to public school, and they've been indoctrinated into this emotionalized false world that is devoid of intuition. They are literally enemies of their intuition. And so this is the election of Donald Trump as president. These protests are evidence. They're actually, here's evidence that we need Donald Trump as president. These are sort of reassuring evidence that the right thing happened, because and it happened none too soon. So I think Trump will handle because it's going to be a long time. These people keep saying we're going to build our momentum and have our protests or whatever, but so far I don't think Trump has said a whole lot. And it's still, 70 days before Trump, before the inauguration, maybe, something like that, 69 days now, maybe, perhaps, I don't know, something like that. So, how long are they going to be able to keep their momentum, if Trump doesn't, he's not responding, so what's inevitably going to happen, they're going to lose their... the sort of the immediacy of their continuing protests, because the news media is, trying to make a big deal out of these protests and make it seem like, oh my God, it's the end of the world. Inevitably, what's going to happen is that, and it's already, as I alluded to in the podcast last night, they're fighting with each other. And that sort of is continuing. I watched this really stupid clip on YouTube last night of these people. You know, it was taken by a TV station, and there were some people at this protest, and they were arguing with each other, and they were all screaming at each other at the top of their lungs. And of course, none of them made any sense because they were all like super emotional. And so this is the type of mentality that they've fallen into. And so inevitably what's going to happen, it's going to degenerate, and they'll fight amongst themselves, and they're going to lose their energy. And if you're running on emotional energy, and this is a good lesson for anybody, if you're running on emotional energy, then that's the wrong kind of energy. Your body, you're a human being, is not designed, you know, spiritually or physically, to run on emotional energy. That's the wrong kind of energy. And inevitably, if you're running your body and your soul on emotional energy, you're going to end up with diseases. And there's probably who knows how many different diseases that a human being can get with adding new ones all the time. Whereas you look at the animal world, and maybe animals can get few dozen diseases here and there, depending on the species, or less. And yet human beings can, there's just a myriad of things that can go wrong. Why is that? It's because human beings are running on the wrong energy, for the most part. So inevitably what's going to happen, Trump is going to handle them properly. He may not have to say anything. He may not have to do anything. As I say, that's almost, let's see, 30, let's see. So you got the rest of this month, and then you got all of December, and then you get partway into January before the swearing-in ceremony. And so they're going to have a hard time keeping that going as long as Trump isn't reacting, because that's what they're looking for, is they're wanting to somehow get to him, or get to his supporters. Well, they're not getting to me. They're little crybabies. They're like the little kid in the supermarket checkout line throwing a fit. I don't care, They're irrelevant. They're stupid. It's a silly thing. They're making fools of themselves. And it doesn't really matter if the news media is making a big thing out of it or not. Now, who's watching the news anymore? There aren't that many people that even watch. A lot of the people I talk to have turned it off. And they've turned it off some time ago. I've talked to a lot of people, and they all tell me they've turned it off for the most part. They've just shut it off. There's some exceptions to it, but mostly they've just turned it off. So, and the viewership numbers are continuing to go down. So, they're going to burn out. But they're just evidence that Donald Trump is really needed as president. Absolutely. So I have to say, kind of repeat myself, I believe that we, America, may have been granted kind of a reprieve. Now, how long is the reprieve going to last? Don't know. And it really does depend on what we do with the reprieve. We may have been granted a reprieve with the election of Donald Trump. It's a remarkable thing that's happened. As I said in the podcast last night, this is this is the most probably the most remarkable thing that has happened in any of our lifetimes, certainly my lifetime. You know, this is really a quite a remarkable thing that has happened. So, I have to say that I am really happy with the results of the election, and I don't these protests. I knew that they were going to happen, but I don't really care about it. They're kind of irrelevant. The people are irrelevant. All these people that are still melting down, have at it, go in the, it's kind of like you have your little kid and you send him to the room and he screams and cries and bangs these, put him in a rubber room, if you have to. Take the crazy person and put them in the rubber room. Maybe in a straitjacket if you need to, so they don't harm themselves. And so that's what's going on. They're throwing their little temper tantrums and what have you. And some of them may, at the end of the period, some of them will come, they'll realize, hey, I was wrong. I was just stupid. Or they will be like Barack Obama and Bill and Hillary Clinton, and it may bring the best out of them. It's possible that it could end up bringing some of them around. So a very great thing has happened. This the election of Donald Trump, best possible outcome of the election. So I could keep talking and talking and talking. But I think what I'm going to do, I'll go ahead and start playing. I've got just under 20 minutes of Jeremy kind of talking. And so I know at first he's going to be, in the whole thing maybe, I don't know. But he's going to be talking about the election results, and I could very well end up kind of doing a stop-start type of thing with Jeremy's comment. So here is Jeremy.
Hi, Tom. It's Jeremy. And it's been a while since I checked in with you, but I'm actually driving home. It's Saturday evening, and I'm driving home from a weekend gig that I have in the city where I teach at one of the schools. I wouldn't say it's a vocational school, but it's an extension of Georgetown University called the School of Continuing Studies. So I teach a class there once a semester, and it's a couple weekends, nothing big. It's a couple weekends for a decent amount of money, and then I'm back to the old routine again. So it doesn't disrupt my normal life too much. And it keeps me sharp, and it keeps me interacting with people who want to learn the craft, as it were. So just thought I'd check in with you and do a little bit of continuing the election conversation. So I figured that there was going to be one of those podcasts dropping pretty soon once the election went the way it did. So good news for people like you and me. So even though I certainly wasn't a Trump supporter during the primaries, once he became the selected candidate, I had no trouble rallying behind him. And I think that his way of doing things will definitely be a good shakeup. So that's been pretty clear from the beginning, even during the primaries. And I would say that if there's one thing that's pretty clear about Donald Trump over any candidate, at least that I can think of in recent memory, it's that he deserves it. I mean, look at what happened. He outdid, 16 or 17 other primary candidates. And this field was so stacked against him purposefully in order to water down the amount of time he would be able to be on screen during debates, and people stayed in way longer than they should have when it was clear that there was zero support for them. They continued to try to hang in and act like they had some support when none existed. And so the Republican Party did their own effort to water down Trump's inevitability, I suppose we'll call it now. But so he was opposed by the party that he was running for the nomination of. I won't say his own party, because I would say Trump is probably more of an independent anyway. But in addition to that, we had all of the, and I will call it rigging, because that's clearly what it was, when you have collusion between the media and the opposing party, that is just laid bare in the emails that have come out. And by the way, still no denial of those emails being authentic, in spite of all the finger pointing to Russia for no explicable reason. By the way, I read that supposed letter that was released by this joint, I don't know, I think it was called the Office of the Director of some joint shared intelligence management, whatever. I was not impressed at all with that. That was essentially a memo from one person that purported to represent the opinions of a group of intelligence agencies. And all that did to me was serve to remind me that we have way too many intelligence agencies. I mean, I can't imagine that these people are sharing information the way they're supposed to, and how it was supposedly all fixed after 9/11. And now we've got some great database of shared information, and we're just pooling all that data. All it tells me is that there are far too many intelligence agencies and that they're not doing a very good job, when Julian Assange came out himself and said that their source was not in Russia. So if a bunch of dopes at an intelligence agency, or one dope at the top, decides that because something was typed out on a Cyrillic keyboard, but that means that Russia was the state actor behind it, that is patently ridiculous. So I don't know that that's where, I don't know if that's what happened, but I'm just saying, like, there was no evidence presented to support that conclusion, and it was clearly propaganda. And that's kind of been the story of this election, propaganda. And I'm sick of it. Everybody I talk to is sick of it. Even the people on the Democratic side were not excited about their candidate. All they just based their vote on hating Trump, and many Trump voters based their vote on hating Clinton, and here we sit. So I think that the wave was based on, in my opinion anyway, and again, this is something that certainly affected my vote, although I never could have voted for Clinton anyway, but I did consider at one point maybe throwing my vote towards a third-party candidate. But for me, it was a combination of obvious factor of the Supreme Court justices that will be selected in the next few years. The fact that Ruth Bader Ginsburg is once again protesting Donald Trump, although subtly in this case, wearing her dissent collar to court. We're all so scared of your dissent collar. That, you know, there's going to be a pretty clear shakeup coming up in the Supreme Court that's going to affect decisions for the next several years. So the next 10, 20 years of Supreme Court decisions could very well now, because of this election, be more conservative. And that's what I'm hoping for, and hoping that Trump sticks to his guns. And by the way, I was actually annoyed that Chris Christie was even involved with this transition team, and so overjoyed. I mean, I'm one of those people that cannot stand Chris Christie. Being a former resident of New Jersey, I loathe New Jersey politics. Even in the short time that I was there, I learned to hate it. And even though he wasn't the governor while I lived there, it's pretty clear that that entire system is just a network of greasy, grimy tendrils. And he's a part of that system. I'm sure that Trump will throw him some sort of a bone, but I was glad to see that he restructured his transition team to exclude Chris Christie. And that, to me, was a great sign that he threw that over to Pence. And so I'm sure Chris Christie will be some sort of special prosecutor, or, you know, maybe attorney general if Rudy Giuliani decides he's too old for it or something like that. But I think that that's kind of where, you know, it's an indication to me that maybe Trump is leaning even more conservative than I might have thought. The fact that he's already kind of just saying, you know, Christie, take a hike. And I'm guessing it had something to do with the whole George Washington Bridge scandal thing. Bridgegate. Ooh, it's hilarious that somebody that closes a lane on the George Washington Bridge to piss off the mayor of Fort Lee would get 20 years in jail for conspiracy. And meanwhile, the Clintons are just walking free. It's crazy to me how upside down this fake justice system is. So if there's any semblance of justice to be had with the reorganization that's coming under Trump, I am looking forward to it. With regard to the actual, like, the media collusion, I think that that for me was one of the highlights of election night, not just watching the numbers go up in Florida and Ohio, and then, oh my gosh, watching Pennsylvania flip towards the end, towards Trump. And it was funny because we were watching that happen at the same time that New Hampshire was flipping blue. And I was like, who cares? You can have my New Hampshire for your Pennsylvania, and let's all go home. And, oh man, seeing my home state, my native home state of Wisconsin flip red and Michigan turn red. I mean, just, it was beautiful. And I think all the people now, of course, on the Democrat side complaining about the popular vote not being effective, it's pretty obvious to me when I just look at a map of all the counties in the country that voted one way or the other. And I mean, there's a few dots of blue in the entire country. And those are the most populated areas of the country. And just seeing that half of our population is concentrated in about, you know, five cities is, or, you know, I'm sure it's more than five cities, but it's a ridiculously small area of land that has these high concentrations of urban populations and just overrepresented liberal domains. It's crazy to me that anybody would ever consider on the conservative or constitutional side advocating for getting rid of the Electoral College. If that ever happens, then we're over. The conservatives will never be able to maintain control. So, what else? Oh yeah, so as far as the media goes, being able to watch them just all just kind of like put their head in their hands and just throw up their hands and say, you know, it's over. We were all wrong. I mean, I can't tell you. I wouldn't watch Fox News. I refuse to watch Fox News because they're so in the bag. It's unbelievable. I can't stand Megyn Kelly and her smugness. But I was watching CNN and just loving life, watching Van Jones just melt down on the air, complaining about how this election was all about race and this was a white lash. That was his word that he made up, that, you know, we're this is a white lash, guys. And you know, just have him go on and on about how it was all racially motivated. And then at one point he just threw and he's like, I realize it's not all about race. And that was kind of it. You know, he went right back to the race thing. But you know, I think that there's been some rational people on the left since the election that have come out and just said, now we know how dishonest the media, the pollsters, how dishonest all these people are, and we should never trust them again. And that, you know, has even given me some reason to be hopeful when I hear people on the opposing side of things acknowledge how faulty and untrustworthy those organizations are, and to say, I no longer view that as a credible source, and they're in the ones that have been carrying the water for the liberals for so long, I actually am really happy about that. And it means that there's another wave of new media coming along, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot more liberal players, your Huffington Posts and your, I don't know, whatever other players that I don't care about that are liberal, that'll be out there, you know, sort of springing up here and there. But they can't seem to control their emotions. I mean, there really is just such a, it's a much more measured approach on virtually everything when it comes to how people react to these results. I mean, if you look back at 2008 and 2012 and just think about how Republicans reacted, it was, all right, we lost. It's time to go home and rethink this. There was no rioting. There was none of this grandstanding on the TV. And meanwhile, the media just gloated and tells us how dumb we are because we voted a certain way. Well, I've got news for everybody. There's only two choices legitimately to make in this election. And there was no way that I was going to go against, guaranteed. Well, I shouldn't say guaranteed because it hasn't happened yet. But the prospect of actually having more conservative justices on the Supreme Court. I mean, I was viewing that as kind of the basis of any chance that we might have to right the ship. Now, I wish Trump would stop saying replace Obamacare. And I know he has to say that because otherwise everybody who's on it will freak out. But I think everybody who's on it is now starting to realize how expensive it's going to get if things are allowed to continue. So, it's already people are wishing that they had their old system back, and it's going to all fall apart in short order. I'm glad that TPP is dead, the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal. Glad that's dead. But realistically, I'm not really sure. All this talk of jobs, I know that there are plenty of manufacturing jobs that can be created at the small to medium business level, but I don't see jobs like car manufacturing or, mass scale manufacturing jobs really coming back in this age of robotics. I think that what it's going to do is it's going to foster another revolution of small to medium sized manufacturers. And then we can have trade deals where those businesses have much more sophisticated global distribution networks now that, the logistics just didn't exist the last time around for anybody who was a small businessman to produce things, to manufacture things. Now we've got the 3D printing revolution. We've got the injection mold revolution. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff where you can produce stuff on a small scale with manual labor and some, machine help. But I think that that's probably what the next industrial revolution is going to look like. It's going to be much more widely distributed, but on a much smaller scale. And once you scale up to a certain point, that's when the robots take over. And we kind of have to be okay with that, because that is what's going to happen with these lower skilled jobs that robots are just going to be able to pick those up and do them without too much trouble and too much overhead cost. And that's what the future looks like.
Okay, well, let me go ahead and interrupt. I think you're right regarding the manufacturing jobs, because a lot of the manufacturing that still exists, even on the smaller scale, a lot of it has already been automated. There are occasions when I'll go to, let's say I deliver something to a plant somewhere, and and I can see part of the, maybe part of the production line. And it looks like, you see all these potential, they might have been stations at some point in the past where someone would be, and they're mostly just unmanned stations. Maybe there's a computer screen there, and so it's possible that someone goes around and kind of checks those things sometimes, or if something gets out of kilter or whatever. But there's a lot of plants that the plants I've been in, and they're different kinds of places, but a lot of the ones that I've been in where I've been able to see part of the production line, they're largely unmanned. You'll have a few people that are around, but it's not like if you see a movie from the some sort of a film, a black and white film from the 1950s or the 40s or the 50s, where they show the inside of these factories and you got all of these people working on the production line. That type of thing does not exist, at least that I know of. there that I've been able to see. So I think that, you know, automation, but automation is actually, people want to blame automation. Automation is actually a good thing. If you can automate, then what that ends up doing, it increases productivity. And we, you know, increasing productivity is always a good thing. That's not, people want to say, oh, that's a bad thing, because then you have more people that are, you know, you can create more with fewer people. And that's somehow, and then what about the people that would otherwise be employed? Well, they'll be employed doing something else. So I think that, but, you know, like you're saying, we can get some of the jobs, you know, like on a smaller scale. And the vast majority, a lot of people don't realize that the vast majority of jobs come from small businesses. They're not coming from giant employers like, you know, that have like Apple that's got 100,000 employees, or Walmart that's got at least that many employees, or, you know, other companies that have lots and lots of employees. Those are not where the vast bulk of jobs come from. The vast bulk of jobs come from small businesses. So what Trump has talked about doing is lowering the income tax rate, getting rid of a bunch of unnecessary regulations. And don't forget, you know, look how many regulations have been piled on and on and on just in, you know, by Obama. Because that's kind of one of the progressive ideas, that you regulate things. You know, it's kind of like, you can think of it tying the, you know, you have a giant, you know, kind of laying on his back. And if you put enough strings and tie him down, he's not going to be able to move. And that, just think of the regulations as in sort of that way. So get rid of a bunch of the regulations. The general bombastic nature of Donald Trump is really going to end up having a kind of a powerful effect, and it already has had a powerful effect on our enemies, you know, and foreign and domestic. Because there are domestic enemies. You know, what do you think all these protesters are? They're domestic enemies. You know, here's the evidence that, you know, with all these domestic enemies protesting, here's the evidence that we really do need Donald Trump. You know, and otherwise, you know, and if they're not enemies, why are they protesting? So, So I think, generally speaking, I think things are going to begin to improve probably. So, but I think, you know, overall, I don't know that it was so much about jobs, you know, because he kept talking about jobs. I think that, you know, is probably, and this is just kind of my opinion, and I know other people have this, you know, probably share the same opinion. I really believe that one of the things that sort of pushed it over the edge, you know, pushed a lot of people over the edge, was this men in the bathroom and the women's room thing, you know, that happened, I guess, a few months ago. The idea that, women, you know, men can go into the women's room because all they have to do is just say, well, I'm, you know, I feel like a woman today, and I feel uncomfortable going into the men's room, so I'm going to go into the women's room and nobody can stop me. You know, and if you try to stop me, then I'm gonna scream, that you're transphobic or something. And I think that's what pushed a lot of people over the edge, both Republican and Democrat, because there's plenty of people that's sort of over the top, and it kind of shook them awake to a certain, you know, at least to a certain extent. So, you know, but overall, what's going to happen with jobs? Don't know. But I think that things will start to improve. You know, it may take a little while, but I think things are going to improve. If you look back at the state of the economy under Jimmy Carter, you know, I don't know how old you were then, but I was in my 20s. If I'm thinking correctly, yep, I was in my 20s. I'm 61 now, but I was in my 20s when the Jimmy Carter presidency was underway. What a disaster it was. And then once Reagan became president, within a fairly short period of time, you know, it took a couple of years, and things really started turning around. So I think the same exact thing can happen with President Trump. Really do believe that. But apart from that, that's not our problem. Our real problem, the problem that is sort of an existential threat to the United States of America, isn't the jobs so much as the cultural problems we have. This cultural rot, moral rot, moral decay that has been allowed to take place. That's what's threatening us right now. And if we have been granted a reprieve by the election of Donald Trump, then if we want to make good on that reprieve, then it's up to us to really bring our morals back into line. As individually, and you know, there's an amazing effect. I mean, you know, and I was listening to this thing, and there's a Bible verse, and unfortunately I can't quote it. It was out of the Old Testament, but it was to the effect that the ancient Israelites, that if they, you know, if they just had five people that were basically, that were right, that were righteous, if they had five people, then they could, have like four people or five people, but they would have like five times the effect. They could have five times the effect they could take out so many of their enemy. And then if they, and I don't remember the exact numbers, and then if they had 100 right people, or, you know, kind of righteous people, or people that were doing doing the right thing, living the right way, etc., etc., they had 100, then they, you know, it would multiply basically, you know, like 1,000-fold. And so, in other words, you know, and what that's trying to get across, and I'm not doing a very good job of explaining it, but the idea that it's getting across, or the principle actually that it's sort of revealing there or talking about, is that if we as individuals really get our ducks in a row as far as our own lives, then that will have a way more of a profound impact on the people that we deal with than we can ever realize. You know, we may never realize it, but you can end up having a really profound effect. It's up to us. You know, people always say, well, it's the government's fault, or it's these other people's fault, but it's never my fault. You know, and in the meantime, I'm doing the wrong things too, you know, but it's always someone else's fault. You know, and there's another line, you know, if you want to pull the moat, you know, the dust moat out of someone else's eye, you pull the log, you know, check for the, you know, get the log out of your own eye first. You know, meaning that you got to clean yourself up first. you know, before you can start pointing, you know, help, you know, pointing fingers elsewhere. So, but it really is, you know, if, as I say, if we have been granted a reprieve, and it's possible that we have, I think we have, but if we have, then we better make the most of it. Because the reprieve can just as easily be taken away. You know, we know that. You know, do we, you know, now I don't have any kids, you know, but if I did, be different, you know, probably a different story, but like to disarm myself right up front. But I do have nieces and nephews. Now, if, do I want them to have a life? You know, because how much longer am I going to be around? You know, it, that part, you know, I'm 61 years old, be 62 in April. I'm not, you know, let's face reality, I'm not going to be around that much longer. You know, maybe, maybe if I'm lucky, I'll be around long enough for, you know, for the, you know, the whole, you know, the, you have a Donald Trump presidency and he appoints the people to the Supreme Court, and as Jeremy was just saying, maybe that has a 20-year effect. Well, I'll be lucky to live that long. You know, I'll consider, you know, if I make it that to that age, I'm going to consider myself really fortunate. However, that being said, I've got nieces and nephews. You know, so how long is it going to be before, you know, or they've got, you know, their entire lives in front of them in some cases. So, you know, what kind of a world are they going to inherit from us? So it really, you know, it really is up to us to, you know, really take advantage of this reprieve that we've been granted. Potential reprieve, you know. I like to put that caveat in there. Anyway, I could continue talking and talking. But, you know, if I do that, then we're never going to get to the rest of Jeremy's comments. So I think I better just go back to Jeremy's comments. So here is Jeremy.
I hear people talking about this universal minimum wage, or not universal minimum wage, but universal, what is it, universal minimum income or something like that, where they're basically just proposing giving a certain amount of money to every single citizen as a baseline distribution of cash from the government. And it's a silly concept that obviously would just foster a lot more laziness and a lot more reliance on distributions from the government, which I'm sure in time would just become what we call, I forget the word that we use for these sort of liabilities that the government has, no matter what.
Well, I think you may be looking for the word, maybe entitlements. But what comes to mind, that, as you say, that's really a stupid idea. This idea, well, we're going to have a basic minimum income. Really foolish, stupid idea. Because what does that encourage? That would immediately, it encourages sloth. And, you know, sloth is bad. Bad news for any society that has, you know, you do not want sloth. So, you know, but see, what these, you know, people like Elon Musk, you know, he's got a few little strong points, and I, you know, and I kind of like the Tesla vehicles. They have their strong points, but, you know, the idea that you can have, you know, some of these people like him think that, you know, there's going to be all these robots, and the robots and the computers are going to be so, you know, we're going to have artificial intelligence, quote unquote, and somehow these things are going to be so, they're going to be smarter than we are somehow, and they're going to be somehow they're going to be autonomous, and then you have this idea, and of course it's been explored in science fiction books for years and years and years, the idea that you have the machines that build other machines that repair the machines, and then the human beings don't have to do anything. The human beings are, you know, just kind of become useless or just sort of lazy, and they don't know anything, and they become kind of, you know. And so, but you know, those kind of books have been around for a long time, you know, kind of exploring those ideas. But the idea, the very idea that you're going to have a machine that builds another machine, that, you know, and all these machines are going to be, you know, building the other, designing and building the other machines, and everything's just going to somehow magically work. Ultimately, what is that? You're trying to say, well, I'm making the perpetual motion machine. Well, excuse me? There's no such thing as a perpetual motion machine that, you know, that I know of. If you say that, you know, you're making a perpetual motion machine, chances are you're going to be laughed off the face of the earth if you're an inventor. You know, and there have been people that have tried it. I don't think anybody's ever succeeded. But that's basically what they're trying to do, and they want to believe it. They want to believe that they, somehow they can build this perpetual motion machine that it's going to have, you know, kind of many robotic parts and artificial intelligence, and somehow it's all going to magically work. Now, you know, and there's a variety of reasons. You know, you can increase productivity with mechanics, with machinery, with computers. Absolutely, you can increase productivity, no question about it. And as I said before, that if any time you can increase productivity, you know, just one individual's productivity or a group of people's productivity, it's a great thing. It really is a good thing if you can increase productivity, because that means that you've got a bigger pie for everybody. So you know, but the idea that somehow that the machines going to be conducting business, you know, they keep talking about self-driving trucks. I like to keep coming back to that, self-driving trucks. Well, somehow the trucks are going to just drive themselves. Well, is that all? What does a truck driver do? Because I think that a lot of people just look at trucks and they see truck drivers driving up and down the road and they think, oh, well, that's all that driver does is he's just driving up and down the road. We can make a machine that can do that. But they don't, you know, what they fail to realize is that there's business being transacted. And you know, or they were, you know, some, it's been some time back, you know, Mercedes-Benz had a, you know, a truck on the Autobahn. Here's a truck on the Autobahn, and it's, you know, driving itself on down the Autobahn, okay? Well, what about, you know, at the other end? Now, in Europe, I was talking to this guy that, you know, he's was born in Germany. I think he's an American. His dad was in the service. He was born in Germany and lived there for a long time, and now he's back in the U.S. and he's probably going to move back to Germany. But in any case, he was telling me about German trucks, and you know, and I know they're smaller. That, you know, the European trucks tend to be smaller and they're all cab overs. But he was telling me that there is no, you know, you go to a place and the driver is always responsible to do the unloading. Now, I didn't know that. Was not aware of that. That the driver, you know, the driver goes to a place, he's got to unload his own truck. Didn't know that. Well, how's that self, is a truck going to be self-unloading? Is that how that's going to work? I don't think so. Maybe you're going to have a super cruise control that, you know, if maybe they can make that work, maybe they can't. I wouldn't count on it too much, you know. But maybe you can kind of help make the super cruise control aspect of it work okay. Maybe you can, maybe you can't. Maybe it's, you know, you can partially get it to work to the point where it's like the Tesla so-called autopilot, where it becomes dangerous because then people begin to rely on it too much and kind of become distracted. But that's all it's going to be. So if it increases productivity, great, wonderful, not a problem. You know, any technology that can increase productivity is good. Don't have a problem with that. So, but anyway, let's get back to Jeremy's comment, because I, like I said before, I could just talk for hours, no doubt.
But so, I mean, I can't stand the thought of that. But the talk is because of this new age that's being issued in of, you know, robots doing the work for us. And so the assumption is that those jobs are gone forever. And I just don't buy that. I think that innovation is what drives the creation of jobs that nobody even knows that we need yet. So whether that means jobs on another planet, whether that means, you know, jobs that have to do with an industry that hasn't yet been discovered, which there are plenty of if you look back in history, whether it means, you know, a new technology is sort of stumbled across, or it means we find a new way to refine oil, or a new energy source that kind of makes it easier to do things with a much smaller footprint where cost is concerned, and also the space to run a power plant, for example. If we had portable power plants that could put out a lot of power, it means that we can scale down our operations even more significantly than what I'm talking about. So small to medium businesses can have in-house manufacturing operations that can actually crank out a lot of equivalent work with robotics, potentially. So, you know, there is some, I know it's a conversation that needs to be had, which is where do all these people work once the robots do their job? But the obvious answer that we don't want is to bring in more low-skilled labor. And so I just, for me, it's just such a huge logical disconnect for anybody to suggest that increasing the amount of immigration at a time like this is anywhere near a good idea. Immigration is a good idea, yeah, but the amount that is being proposed and just the lack of skill that's coming along with it, there's no thought for we need to make sure these people have engineering degrees, or they are going to, you know, work in a certain field that where we actually need labor, like the medical field, for example, things like that. You know, we need to be much more judicious about screening those applicants, and they do need to be applicants, obviously. So those are things that I think that, you know, Trump will be a stickler for, because if there's one thing that he's probably really stuck on, it's process, it's optimization in order to make money. And because that's sort of his guiding principle, he is all about maximizing profit, and that means he's about minimizing loss and inefficiency. And wow, does this country need that, right? So I'm sure I might have some more thoughts later on to share with you, but that's all I can think of right now. I just wanted to check in, Tom, and say hi, and, you know, give you some of my thoughts following the election. Glad to hear from you. Glad the election went our way, and talk to you soon. Stay safe out there.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jeremy. So, you know, the thing with the, all of this immigration, you know, there, of course, there are a lot of people that they'll just mindlessly accept it, you know. But the thing is, our overlords, you know, we do have overlords. I'm sorry, all who sin are slaves. We do have overlords. George Soros, the elite people in the government that sort of have ran things into the ground. Those people, some of the people in academia, They think it's just a wonderful thing. They're actually trying to destroy our culture. They see American, you know, the American idea, one nation under God, or one, it's really one nation under intuition, is really what it is. They see that as just an anathema. They hate it. They want to re-engineer humanity in their own, kind of in their own image, and in other words, corrupt it. But they really want to destroy the United States of America, and they also, you know, they're doing the same thing in Europe. They want to kind of, you know, just mix and, you know, kind of mix things up. And somehow that, you know, they want to see all that all cultures are evil, or that are not evil, but they're all the same. All culture is the same. You know, you can't make any value judgments. Muslims culture is just as good as any other, blah blah blah. And what they really want to do, they really want to stamp out. If there's one thing they want to just eradicate, what is that? It is Judeo-Christian values. They hate that. They hate Judeo-Christian values. They want that destroyed. They want to destroy the family unit. They would love to destroy the family unit. Get rid of the idea of a mother and father. You know, get rid of the idea that there's male and female. You know, that it's binary. You know, get rid of that idea. Stamp that out. We got to have multiple choice when it comes to sex. You know, sexual identity, which is absurd. You know, and I don't care. You know, I've had people argue with me, and they say, well, there are people that are born with, kind of like half man, half woman, or hermaphrodite is the term. Well, there are some people that are born that way. Tough luck, you know. That doesn't mean that, for the vast majority of us are binary. We're either male or female. And I was listening to this show earlier. I might as well mention it. I've mentioned it before. Rabbi Daniel Lappin podcast. You can look that up. Excellent podcast. I suggest you listen to it. In the book of Genesis, you know, God created, you know, he created the animals. It doesn't say that he created, he just created the animals. He didn't. But when he created the human beings, it says a couple of times at least that he created the human beings male and female. But the animals didn't mention, you know, he didn't mention that he had male and female. And some of them, you know, the animals, some of them are male and female, but it's, you know, they don't all reproduce the same way. But human beings, specifically mentioned, he created the male and female. And also there's, in this, you know, this Rabbi Daniel Lappin podcast, he was quoting somebody else, and I'm sorry, I can't quote who he was quoting, but the guy said something really profound, and you're going to understand what it is once I tell you. What did the guy say? He said, sexual identity is the first thing we remember and the last thing that we forget. Let me say that again. Sexual identity is the first thing we notice and the last thing we forget. Something, you know, that's pretty close to whatever it was he said. And let me illustrate that for you. Have you met someone? Let's say you met a person a week ago, and they told you, you know, and you had a nice conversation with them. Now, can you remember, you know, what do you remember about that? If I ask you, is that a man or a woman that you had the conversation with, you're going to instantly know that. Even if you have to struggle to remember the details of the conversation, you will remember, I promise you, you will remember, was it a man or a woman that you had the conversation with? So sexual identity is the first thing we notice and the very last thing that we forget. We always remember the sex of the person that we, even if we can't remember the details of the conversation, we can. What do we remember? We remember that we can't remember their name. But what do we remember? We remember if it was a man or if it was a woman. Now, don't we? Isn't that fascinating? Isn't that incredibly fascinating? So, so sex. You know, when it comes down to it, sexual identity is a big deal. You know, and God created us this way for a reason. It wasn't, wasn't an accident. You know, like they just want to, wipe all of it out. So, but there are people that, they just kind of sit around and they think that, you know, we're just the little guinea pigs. They're the overlords. They're smarter than we are. They're the overlords, and they, you know, we're just little peons to be peed on, basically. And they can just organize our lives however they want. And that's how they look at it. And that's fine and dandy if we allow them to do that. But we don't have to allow them to do that. But that requires us to find our morals. Because if you're going to be a slave, what does that say? All who sin are slaves. And that's the fact. And so if you don't want to be a slave, you got to stop sinning. Simple as that. It really is very simple. So, anyway, probably should be cutting this off. See if I can get it uploaded and once again headed to bed. Now I'm on my way. After I unloaded at Harmony, Pennsylvania this morning, they sent a load that I picked up over in Columbus, Ohio. It was already loaded and dropped on the yard, and it delivers. Let's see, today was Saturday, Sunday. So it delivers Monday morning in, was it Stamford? Something, I think it was Stamford or something, without looking, it was in Connecticut. So at this point, I can't see the GPS. What does that say? 420 miles or something, I think I have left to drive. And I'll do that tomorrow being Sunday, and then unload Monday morning, and then no idea where I'll go from there. So, in any case, hope everyone is having a great weekend, and I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.